Welcome to the final Wick and Rob Sports Show for 2016. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drewer. Ho, ho, ho.
Yes, it's that time of the year, Rick. It's Christmas time tomorrow as we're doing this show. And a happy new year to all our listeners. Now, let's look at the last year, 2016, in review, about our highlights for the sporting highlights for 2016. Now, where would you like to start, Rick? Would you like to start with Allied United?
Well, I think, given that South Australia is in the state that it is, economically and everywhere else, I think Adelaide United is perhaps the major highlight.
Yeah, it was quite big, wasn't it? I mean, they were bottom after eight rounds, and they only lost one more game all the way, and they won at Adelaide Oval, 3-1 against the Western Sydney Wanderers. But the atmosphere, the timing, Adelaide Oval just sort of being the jewel of the city, it was what Adelaide needed, really, on the sporting front.
Well, it was. And, you know, I mean, success is success, and there's nothing. We are the sort of bridesmaid, really, when it comes to the eastern states. And putting it bluntly, South Australia doesn't win too many things. And so it was a celebration. Unfortunately, it would seem that it's a one-off celebration at this point in time. But that's the nature of soccer, I think, because any resemblance between the squad that we have now as against the squad that played and won last year is chalk and cheese. But that's the way professional soccer is.
Absolutely. And then when you look at cricket, I mean, South Australia played in the Sheffield Shield, actually hosted it at Glenelg and had every chance to win, but they blew it again. And, of course, New Year's Eve last year, I think it was, when Head hit all those sixes and got his century, and they went on and lost their both finals again. And in the baseball, the Adelaide Bite made the grand final again, but they lost. Crows and Power didn't do anything. It seemed to be a familiar story.
Well, it is, but I guess we've got to look at what we think are the highlights. So probably the lowlights are very much easier to come up with, and plenty of them. But I'm sure you've got a couple there that you'd put in the top four or five.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Olympic Games was fantastic and in Rio, and we had some local sort of people sort of involved there. But I must admit, Usain Bolt winning the 100-metre relay double for the third straight Olympics, that's something special. That's something that people will remember historically for centuries.
Oh, it is. And he is probably, and has been awarded, I believe, as the greatest athlete in the world, and deserves to be so. I think for getting the three-time winner, I think the most impressive thing is that unless there's some incredible shock later to be revealed, which I don't believe there is, for him to be as dominant as a drug-free athlete is the most sensational part of it.
Oh, absolutely. We all like our athletes. I mean, you look at Jesse Owens, and then, of course, Cole Lewis, and now Usain Bolt sort of will be remembered as they were.
Well, correctly. That is correct. But I think we, as I've already said, it's because of the image. I really genuinely hope that nothing falls off, the wheels don't fall off in terms of later discoveries, as our friend Mr. Armstrong did. But I think he's a great athlete and clean.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, expanding sort of nationally, you look at the Western Bulldogs. I mean, that was a fairy tale story, them winning their first and their second flag ever, and their first since 1954. That was a win for the average person.
Well, they've come from the, as it were, the working class heroes, and that's it was indeed. And I think what was more remarkable is that they did it with nothing going right for them. They were beriddled with injuries throughout the entire season, and they just kept on going, kept on performing, and you really, about the only thing that went right for them, I think, and no one's really going to know this, is that because of the rest week between the end of the minor round and the start of the major round, it probably enabled them and we won't know whether there's a correlation for a while yet. It enabled them to come from the bottom half of the eight, which nobody's done before, under this scheme. When I think the Crows won a final, they were six or seven teams or something. But under this scheme, it gave them an opportunity, and then probably everything went right for them in the grand final. But the greatest thing of all was that it was a working class win. Everybody, I think, other than the opposition fans, wanted the Bullies to get up, and they did.
Yeah, the old system where the Crows, they came from fifth in 98, and they actually lost their first final, but it was a different configuration. Now it's more straightforward. It's been the acceptable way of playing for a decade plus. To come from seventh place, obviously the rest did them good, but just who they beat along the way. You know, they beat the top team in the Giants, and they beat Hawthorn, West Coast in Western Australia. So they didn't have any easy games.
Oh, they certainly didn't. And they didn't throughout the year with the injuries they had. I mean, it really, you know, dollar for dollar, pound for pound, whatever, it probably is the greatest AFL performance in terms of overcoming adversity to get to holding up that premiership flag.
Now, historically, I can't go past Chicago Cubs winning the Baseball World Series in the USA sort of this year. 108 years since they've won a world title. 1945 was the last time they were even in a World Series. They've had so many hard luck stories. They've had the goat, about the curse of the goat story, and they've been lovable losers, and they've had guys that played, their longevity was 30-odd years and never played in any playoffs, and it's just an incredible story. And for them to win, and the way they did it, they dominated the season, but in the World Series, they were 3-1 down. They got up and forced a seventh game. They were ahead by five runs, and then all of a sudden it was even, and nine innings it was even, and then there was a rain delay, and they're playing another team trying to break a drought from 48, and then they got up and won it. It was just incredible. Like the Western Bulldogs, it was a victory for the people.
Well, I'm sure with your expertise that's correct. But on the other hand, I feel a bit sorry. I mean, if it had been the other way around, the other crew hadn't been too successful, and so it wasn't quite like the Western Bulldogs, I don't believe, because they were playing a well-established and successful side, whereas you really had two baseball teams who really hadn't got too many trophies on the cabinet for a long time. And so one of them, and it's taken nothing away from the way they did and came from, 3-1 down, but, they were both, I suppose, with due respect, losers playing for the final, and one of them had to win it.
Yeah, I know, but I think there was just something about the Cubbies that the name itself sort of engendered a little bit of sympathy sort of over the years, whereas Cleveland Indians had their chances. They've made a few World Series in the 90s, so I don't know. I personally sort of was quite pleased that the Cubs had won, and I think a lot of long-term baseball fans were as well.
Oh, look, I'm sure you're right. I'm sure you're right. I think the same thing happened in English soccer. And it's good to see somebody who isn't Liverpool or whatever, or the traditional Sydney or Hawthorn, win something for a change.
No, you're dead right there. An interesting situation occurred in the last minor round game before Christmas for the A-grade softball. And I think this is worthy of a mention because Monica Perry is a USA pitcher that's been out. This is her third season, and she played for Sturt, and she's pitched into the last two premierships, and she's an absolute superstar. In her first season, she won 14 games. Of course, they have win-loss records for the pitchers. The second season, 15 wins, one draw. So she came out late this season. She had never been defeated in a local South Australian game. She won her first five games here. And then the last game before Christmas, playing Walkerville, the top team, Sturt went down 2-0, which was Monica Perry's first loss in the Adelaide competition. So in all, she's 34 wins and one draw without loss until that one loss.
Well, that is a fantastic statistic, and not being a great follower of women's softball, although I'm a great softball fan, it probably indicates that she's a cut above the level that she's playing at for her dominance to be the way it is. And I guess that's perhaps one of the things that worries me about recruiting overseas sports stars, how, you know, one team can, dare I say, afford to do it and the majority not do it. And if you've got someone, and let's face it, the pitch is a pretty important player in the squad, if you've got someone who's so dominant, it probably indicates, at least in my mind, that she's, you know, it's a bit like an A-grade player playing a B-grade team.
Yes, but in this case, with the softball, it's a much maligned sport for many years. South Australia have struggled. They haven't won a title since 1954 in the A-grade. Since Monica's come in, Chelsea Cohen, who happened to be the winning pitcher against Monica last week, those two US pitchers plus Clonell have Morgan Lashley's joined them, so they're three in the system, and there's some good juniors as well. The whole competition now has improved. The fielding's improved, the batting's improved, the pitching's improved, and it has a lot to do with the influx of a couple of American pitchers that have given it the whole competition a little bit of a boost. I understand where you're coming from, where you look at the baseball and some other sports, soccer, and they get all the import from overseas and they flood it. This is more of a situation where these American college players have come over here, and not only do they're great ambassadors for the sport, they're top players, they give a lot of coaching sessions to the youngsters as well. So they really put back into the game. That's probably something that's missing a little bit in some of the other sports, a la soccer and baseball. So at this stage with the softball, they're having a magnificent contribution to the sport.
Oh, that's great. Well done.
Now let's look at the local scene. We spoke before about the Olympic Games and, of course, a silver medal to the cycling team pursuit, which included Jack Bowbridge for his second silver medal. And getting into the final, Callum Scotson, who just happens to be Jack's next-door neighbour in Gawler.
Well, I recall us discussing that before. Quite an amazing coincidence.
It is. And let's not forget Chelsea Jentz, who's a Trinity old scholar. She gave up the sport for a little while, and then she made the Olympics in the long jump. She just missed out on the final. Just how fantastic is it to have three local guys here from the Gawler region in the one Olympics?
Oh, well, that is quite exceptional. I doubt whether there's any other town in South Australia that could brag that, to be honest.
No, you're dead right, unless it's a team sport like hockey or something like that. I think there's a couple of hockey players from the Riverland. But, yeah, something for us to be very proud of. What about the Tour Down Under? I mean, it's sort of a touch of scorer quite often. This year, back in January, we had the loop between Lindock, Williamstown and Cockatoo Valley, which is just a couple of k's down the road. It was just magnificent event to be tied in this close to Gawler and the Barossa.
Oh, it is. And it's a great advertisement. I mean, that's, you know, the athleticism is one thing, but the exposure is another thing. And particularly when it gets shoveled off all over the world on television. And so it's a great thing for, you know, whether it's the Fleurieu, whether it's the Barossa, whether it's whatever, it's partly to do with the pictures that go out as much as the guys riding bikes.
I'll never forget, it must have been 7 years ago when the start was in Gawler for one of the legs, and we had Rudd, the Prime Minister, we had the Premier, we had the Mayor, we had the local rep. They were all there sort of getting their pictures taken. Lance Armstrong at that stage was a big selling point for the tour. Obviously, he hasn't been back since he's been busted, but I suppose we're lucky out this way in the Gawler and Barossa to be associated with the Tour Down Under sort of almost on a regular basis.
Well, I think because of the geographical area, that's a great thing. I wonder if Lance has given back his $1 million.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
Now, just talking about, obviously, we've got to touch on the footy and the netball, the local competition. I mean, Barossa District's coming from bottom the year before to top. I mean, that's just incredible when teams can do that.
Well, Robert, it is. And I think if you recall, we could wind back a tape or two, and I think this fellow actually predicted, despite the fact that Gawler Central had gone through unbeaten, that Barossa was going to win the game. I think they did, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. But look, I'm just absolutely amazed. What's the name of that person you bought the crystal ball from?
I've polished it well, and he came up with the right answers.
You've done well, Marty. I mean, I must admit, I predicted Gawler Central, but at the end of the day, it was pretty close.
No, it wasn't close at all. They were never going to lose. They got away to a fantastic start. And in actual fact, the game was over at three-quarter time, and probably just as well, because all of a sudden the rain came, the wind blew, and in fact, it just as well Barossa actually had the lead they had, because they actually got diddled a bit in the last quarter. But no, I'll let you have your moment of glory, and maybe it just wasn't going to be Gawler's day.
Well, if you don't mind, Mick, I'll save that glory for when I really need it. I don't need it on this occasion. What about the netball? Now, Kapunda, they hadn't won since 2006, but they've always been a dominant team and up there. But there was something about the team this year. They were threatening to have an undefeated season. They lost a game or two late, but they were never going to be beaten in the finals.
Oh, and I think that shows that they were a class act. I'm always a little bit nervous about any team in any sport that goes through undefeated, because there's only one thing you can do, and that's mess up. But they were very professional, and they deserve the premiership. I mean, you'd probably argue that Gawler Central deserved the premiership, but they had a few close games along the way, and I think and that's the way football and netball is. You know, you have two seasons. You have a minor round and a major round, and it doesn't matter how well you've gone in the minor round. If you don't play well for a few weeks in the major round, well, I guess you call it losing.
And just to finish off with Matt Ayers, who was a young lass we interviewed recently, who's again in the Australian ice hockey team in the under-18s, she was announced as captain. Good luck to her. She was a lovely person, and another local person making good.
That is absolutely great news. I didn't know that until you've just told me. She is personality plus. She's obviously a very talented girl, and I think I can recall when I first met her, I thought, well, you're going to be a leader at school, and she's already now a leader in the sports field, and I think she's got a huge future wherever which direction she goes in.
Absolutely, and to all our listeners, I hope everyone's had a Merry Christmas and all the best for the new year. To you too, Rick. It's been a fantastic year.
Oh, and you have a very Merry Christmas, and it has been a good year. We've had some fun.
This is the Rick and Rob Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Rick Drew.